My name is Kishore Chandiramani, and I welcome you all to the third in a series of 6 sessions on stress management. The topics for today's discussion are how to fine-tune one's judgments and how to deal with the ghost emotions. This involves learning to suspend judgments, that is, being less judgmental and not identifying with some of our thoughts and feelings. I've touched briefly upon the importance of becoming less judgmental in the previous session, and we are now going to deal with this topic in greater depth. The psychological stress can be understood in terms of an emotional reaction that happens in response to a situation. And it's important to note that it is not the actual situation that causes stress, but how we perceive it. To give you an example, if someone walks into a room which is dimly lit and there is a snake in the room, but the person sees the snake as a piece of rope, they will not experience any stress, even though the situation is stressful. On the other hand, if there is a piece of rope in the room, and upon entering the room, they perceive it as a snake, there will be a stress response, although the situation is not stressful at all. So what advice will you give to that person? To suspend your judgment because you haven't got the full information yet, until you switch the lights on and you'll be able to see for yourself what the reality is and how to act. I'm not against judgment because judgments are required for every action that we carry out. And without judgments, there would be no actions. But the problem is that we overdo it. And judgments are the actions of the mind, which lead to mental tiredness and fatigue. There's nothing wrong about making judgments if they are based on a realistic appraisal of the situation and their intensity is proportionate to the situation. But unfortunately, the judgments that we make automatically or instantly are either made as a result of our conditioning from the past, which leads to automatic reactions, or those judgments are made as a result of our perception of this world through the tinted glasses of our emotions. Let me point out here that our minds have got the ability to make appropriate judgments, but this ability remains suppressed due to these strong emotions or conditioning from our past experiences. It's therefore important to disengage ourselves from the immediate judgments that we are making, which will then allow at least a part of our mind to attain a state of equanimity or neutrality. And the judgments that come out of an equanimous mind are appropriate and proportionate to the situation. Those judgments don't need any fine-tuning. The question is how to become less judgmental. And for that, there are 4 or 5 different things that one can keep in mind. The first and the foremost is to say to ourselves that all judgments that we make are relative and not absolute. If I say to myself, I am rich, but then compared to many people, I am not that rich. If I say I am poor, then compared to a lot of people, I am not that poor. And this can be applied to any judgment about health, knowledge, success in life, and so on. What helps here is, whenever we get a thought, we can say to ourselves that the opposite of it may also be true to some extent. In mathematics, if 2 plus 2 is 4, then it can't be 6 or 8. But in psychology, the two opposites can be equally true. For example, one can say, we live in a caring and friendly world. And the opposite of it, that this world is indifferent to our needs and uncaring, is equally true. People are loving and caring, and people are selfish. Both these statements are equally true. There is an ultimate meaning in life, and there is no ultimate meaning, as everything disintegrates eventually. Both these viewpoints would be equally true. I am a successful person, and I am a failure. Both are equally true, depending upon the yardstick we use. This world is a beautiful place to live in, and the saying that the beauty lies in the eyes of the beholder are equally true. The thought of relativity of all our judgments can help us become less rigid and judgmental about ourselves and others. The second thing that can help us here is to say to ourselves that I haven't got the full picture yet. Human life is very complex, and we don't know the inside stories of people's lives. So making judgments about them is likely to cause unnecessary emotions. For example, if I see my neighbor shouting at his son, the first thought that would come to my mind is that this person doesn't seem to be a nice father. But we don't know what this boy has done to deserve the scolding. And even if this man is not a good father, he may be a good husband, a good citizen, a good son, a good sibling. However, if an action is required, then we have to make a judgment on the basis of whatever information is available to us. But if no immediate action is required, then suspending a judgment can be a useful tool. Secondly, we sometimes make judgments on the basis of what one person has told us, which can be erroneous without listening to the other party's version. We generally tend to fill the gaps in our knowledge and information with our intuitive feelings, which can go wrong. Thirdly, when making judgment, we have to say to ourselves, we can't predict the future accurately. What seems to be a very wise judgment now might turn out to be an unwise one in the longer term. And what seems to be very unwise or not well thought out judgment might turn out to be very wise judgment in future. This can make us less rigid about the judgment that we are making now. Finally, we need to move from the global judgments to specific judgments. For example, if a close friend has misbehaved with us, the instant judgments that come to our mind are, he doesn't want to be friends anymore. I should stay away from him. But another way of looking at it would be that a friend of 10 years on Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock was rude to me for 5 minutes. The other example of global judgments is when we make judgments about ourselves in terms of being successful or failure in life and not being good enough. It would therefore be helpful if you could think in terms of specific successes and failures and specific abilities to do certain tasks rather than making global judgments about our abilities. Normally, I ask my clients that whenever you are upset or stressed, ask yourself, what judgments have I made here about myself or about others? And you might find that 6 or 7 times out of 10, you have made some judgment, and that judgment needs to be challenged. It may be that 3 or 4 times out of 10, you're not able to put your finger on any specific judgment that you have made now, and are still feeling unhappy, or maybe happy. These are ghost emotions. The ghost emotions are nothing but the real emotions that we experienced in a real life situation in the past. The situation has become irrelevant, but the emotion is still carrying on in our minds. These emotions, if not processed and worked on soon after experiencing them, go into the unconscious mind as unresolved bits, and they undergo further transformation there, both in terms of becoming exaggerated or neutralized. These emotions go into the unconscious mind in seed form and then bounce back into the conscious mind after a certain gap. The duration of this gap or the time scale is dependent upon a number of factors, but we won't go into the details of them here. It is likely that these emotions that return from the unconscious mind are inappropriate to the situation and also inappropriate to our current mindset. Disidentification with these emotions and experiences can be helpful in dealing with our current situation. I call them ghost emotions because they are not relevant to the reality of the moment. It's very much like watching a film, and sometimes you find getting too involved in the story and becoming emotional or tearful. And then you might find yourself saying, why am I getting emotional? It's just a film. And just by saying that, you are able to pull yourself out of that emotion. In a similar fashion, whilst you are experiencing these ghost emotions, if you're able to say to yourself, this emotion is just a replay of my old emotions that were appropriate in the past, but not anymore, can be helpful. So, as I said earlier, if you are not able to put your finger on any new judgment that you have made, then the emotion that you are experiencing right now may be a result of a past judgment that you made, maybe several months or several years ago, and the resultant emotion was not processed properly, resulting in its residues carrying on living in the unconscious mind. Whilst re-experiencing an old emotion, we have an opportunity to erase it. And the emotion can be erased by using 2 main coping strategies. Number 1, understanding that emotion as impermanent. And number 2, not identifying with it. Which means we understand the true nature of the emotion. And the true nature is that it is not real but a ghost emotion. The ghost emotion gets erased for as long as we keep in mind its temporary nature and also don't identify with it. I'd like to explain the process of identification and disidentification with more details here. Identification basically means that we adopt somebody else's thoughts, viewpoints, behavior patterns, and make them our own. A child identifies with a parent, and children grow up copying their parents' value system, thinking, attitudes, mannerisms, and posture without questioning them. If a father thinks that rich people are tax evaders, or watching sports on television is a wastage of time, children grow up with the same attitude. But when they become an adult, they start questioning the wisdom in the things that their parents had said, and they might disagree with some of their thinking. This process of disagreeing is called disidentification. We find that on a daily basis, thousands of thoughts enter our minds, and we get into the habit of identifying with each of them. This identification with a thought puts an obligation on us not to disagree with it and to act in accordance with it. Whereas disidentification frees us from that bondage. The thoughts that enter our mind can be classified in several categories: stray thoughts, induced thoughts, adopted thoughts, wild thoughts, daydreaming. And as opposed to all these categories, thoughts that truly belong to our real personalities. It's important to make this distinction so that we can identify with the thoughts that really belong to our personality and not with the thoughts that are induced or stray or adopted thoughts. Writing a diary of our emotions is generally helpful in identifying these various categories of thoughts and emotions. How to write such a diary has been described on the website www.undoyourstress.com under the heading Writing an Emotion Diary. Now, the next question is how to disidentify or disengage, which is the first necessary step before we can engage properly and identify appropriately. The question is how to know which thoughts and emotions we should identify with and which ones we have to disidentify from. The answer is, if you can't understand your emotions in terms of what's going on in your life at the moment, and on the basis of the judgments you are making right now, then this has to be something coming from the unconscious mind. All those experiences need to be disidentified with. Discussing identification further and how it can lead to psychiatric symptoms. If one is driving fast on the motorway, a thought comes to the mind: what if I have an accident? Now, in normal course, one is able to disidentify oneself with the thought by saying that this thought was induced in my mind because of the speed of my car, and if I slow down, the thought will disappear. Whereas if one is already an anxious person, he might identify with the thought of dying in an accident, and he may not see this as an induced thought from outside and a thought that does not belong to one's personality. Identification with this thought might lead the person to avoid driving on motorways. If someone is high up in the mountains and very close to a cliff, one might get a thought of falling down, and this can cause a giddy feeling. Identification with this thought will lead to avoidance of heights and high-rise buildings. To give you another example, one day I was driving in Staffordshire and felt very sick. My head was throbbing and body aching. The first thought that came to my mind was that it's some kind of illness taking over me. But then, when I challenged that judgment of mine, I was able to come to a rational understanding that it was just tiredness. The moment I said to myself that it was tiredness, I felt relieved. Because one generally doesn't identify with tiredness. It's something that is temporary and will go away after resting. So what was happening here is that first I identified with that experience, but later on, when I said to myself, it's just tiredness, I was able to disidentify myself from it. I didn't see tiredness as an integral part of my personality. In the same way, if we can visualize all our ghost emotions in terms of the tiredness, then we'll not be frightened of the experience. I normally ask people to visualize their anxiety and depression in terms of the grease and the dirt in one's clothes that, although have gone deep into the fabric of the cloth, don't belong there and can come off. One can think of several examples where identification can create problems and disidentification brings relief. To give another example, when you go out shopping and you see something attractive in the shop window, a shirt or a pair of shoes or a watch, and you want to buy it, but then on second thoughts, you say to yourself, I already have half a dozen of these lying at home, which I haven't used for several months. I don't need this. Now, what was happening is that the thought of buying the object was induced in your mind from outside. When you wanted to buy it, you were identifying with the thought, which means without questioning, you were accepting the need for the object. But on second thought, you disidentified with that desire to buy the object and saw that as being induced in you from outside. You had no plan to buy that object when you set off from your house. Another example, people who watch pornography can understand that it induces an artificial need to indulge in some sort of behavior that may not have originated in the first place in one's mind. It might induce certain needs that don't originally belong to one's true personality. Disidentification with those experiences can help one achieve a balanced attitude to things. This argument of mine is not against sex education, which should be considered appropriate. I must emphasize here that identification has a positive side to it as well, as we learn a lot from the induced, adopted, stray, and wild thoughts. Disidentification does not take you away from these thoughts, but frees you so that you can re-engage with the appropriate thoughts later on. Just because a thought is there in your mind doesn't mean that it belongs to your true personality. It may be a stray or a random thought. It may be an adopted thought from outside. It may be an induced thought. And there is no need to suppress these thoughts or act on them. They should be left alone. And there is no need to push these thoughts out of one's mind as well. Because the mind is like an ocean. It can accommodate anything. You might want to understand your mind in terms of a seabed where there are lots of unpleasant things, horrible man-eating animals, and poisonous weed. And there are beautiful things as well, like pearls and beautiful animals and plants. Just as you can't wipe the seabed clean, in the same way, you can't wipe the slate of your mind clean. There are going to be negative forces and impulses. Because the capacity of the rest of the mind is enormous, you can negotiate your way in such a way that you steer clear from the negative. In the same way, it doesn't matter how horrible or how frightening the thought is. Maybe the coming of the thought in your mind was normal, but acting on it or identifying with it or reacting emotionally to it would be abnormal. I'd like to give a couple of examples here. I had a client who looked after her demented mother for several years, and a thought came to her mind that if her mother dies, she'll not be required to provide the care which had created problems in her own marriage and family life. This thought started a chain reaction of guilt feelings in her. She wondered why she had this thought in her mind in the first place. And was she unconsciously wishing it? This client was able to visualize her mind in terms of the internet, and that there was no need to identify with each and every thought that enters one's mind. She understood that it was quite normal for her to have these thoughts. But having intentions or acting on them would be abnormal. And having guilt feelings was also abnormal. Another example. A client of mine didn't get on well with his father, who was very rich. And this client was desperate for money. The thought that came to his mind was that if his father dies, he'll get all the money. This created feelings of guilt in him. But during the course of the therapy, he understood that coming of the thoughts in his mind was quite normal, and that this thought did not belong to his true personality, as he wanted his father to live a long and happy life. We can see identification working for clients suffering from obsessive compulsive disorder as well. A random magical thought, which is part and parcel of unconscious thinking process, is taken very seriously by the individual who starts identifying with it and feels compelled to act on them. An example of magical thinking in obsessive compulsive disorder patients is, if I can perform certain actions, I can stop my relatives from falling sick or bad things happening to me. This is an example of identifying with a random thought. Let's try to understand the functioning of the mind. All the experiences that we collect on a daily basis are recorded very much like films on DVDs that go into the library of the unconscious mind. And there are thousands or maybe millions of these DVDs stacked in our unconscious mind. These DVDs can't be worked on whilst they are stacked on the shelves of the unconscious mind, because we can't walk into the unconscious mind and erase them. These DVDs can be erased only when they are being replayed. So whenever one experiences an emotion that can't be explained on the basis of one's current life situation, this should be seen as an opportunity to erase it, because otherwise it won't be possible for us to erase it, as the unconscious mind is out of reach for us. These DVDs can be replayed at will by exposing ourselves to certain situations that are anxiety provoking. And this will be discussed in later sessions of this program. If you can think of all your past experiences in terms of innumerable DVDs of all kind, romantic, comedy, sad, horror, exciting, pleasurable, sublime, stored in the unconscious mind, and at different times, different DVDs are played. One can visualize one's self in terms of the television screen or the DVD player and not the films. When a romantic film is being played, the whole screen gets filled with romantic images. There is no room for sadness or anger or anxiety. And when a sad film is being played, the whole screen gets filled with sad images. There's no room for romance. So one can apply the principle of identification here. There's no need to identify with the film that is being played, but with the television screen and the DVD player. One has to say to oneself, I am the television screen and the DVD player and not the film. Whatever I am experiencing right now, although it has filled my mind completely, it's just a tiny proportion of my total life experience. There are thousands of DVDs of pleasure, happiness, inner peace, and divine experiences stored in my unconscious mind that will be played from time to time. If right now a sad or a horror film is being played, it's no big deal. It'll come to an end soon. It's not the real me. This is called non-identification with one's own thoughts and feelings. So in this session, we have looked at number one, judgments and the way we can modify them. We have looked at our emotions, past and present, and how they color up judgments and how to erase them by using the analogy of recording and playing of DVDs. In the next session, we'll be discussing how we can manage stress at the physical level using biofeedback treatment and attention regulation techniques. Thank you very much.